If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Explorminate Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Explorminate Podcast. I am your host, Rob, and joining me today is Drexy. Welcome to the show, Drexy.
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
It's going well. I'm excited to speak to Alex, who is the creative director and co-founder of Chimera Entertainment on Songs of Silence. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Hey, guys. It's great being here. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And so, of course, as I just mentioned, we're here to talk about Songs of Silence, which is a game you guys are developing that's sort of like pseudo 4X, almost like Heroes of Might and Magic-esque. I don't want to like pigeonhole you guys into like a category, but it certainly has like gameplay elements of those two strategy genres there. And it really stands out in a lot of ways, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it. But Alex, before we get started, can you tell me a little about who you are and a little bit about Chimera Entertainment?
Yeah, for sure. So, I'm Alex. I'm the creative director for Chimera Entertainment. Our company is a medium-sized, I would say, independent development studio. We are based in Munich, Germany, so in the south, close to the Alps. And yeah, we have been in business since about 17 years, I would say. Released about 25 games, a lot of smaller ones, a lot of ones which are not firmly within the strategy genre, but actually, when we founded the company back in the day, we started with a PC strategy game. It was an RTS story-driven game back in the day called Wind Chaser, and we always tried to get back into this space. That's really where our passion is. And yeah, this is what we are trying to do with Songs of Silence.
Awesome. So you're back in the strategy game space, and you're working on Songs of Silence. Now, tell us about Songs of Silence, because I'll say this, right? I think that the big head turner is going to be the art direction. And I really want to talk about that more in a little bit, but give us like the advertisement, right? Like the Steam page of Songs of Silence.
Yeah, for sure. So we think of Songs of Silence as a 4X strategy game. I think the big defining factor is that it is very focused. So this is all about recruiting synergistic strong armies, exploring the land, capturing locations to gain more resources, and reinvesting this into your armies. So it's very, I would say, again, it's very focused. It flows very fast. So we really want our players to finish a map in a single evening. That's kind of our tagline. So if you compare it to, more, let's say, complex, slower paced turn-based strategy where you play a single map for 8, 10, 20 hours even, that's not what we want to do. We really want to, keep the game flowing, allow our players to see the mid game, the end game, actually come to a conclusion on the map and then, play another map. So that's the thing. So again, our focus is on recruiting armies and then in very interesting combat system. We can get into more details later, but we have less of a focus on, building up your individual cities and stuff like this. There's a little bit of city management and kingdom management, but it's very condensed, very focused again. So you have to take a couple of key decisions every turn, not 40, 50. So yeah, end your turn after a couple of minutes, not 20 minutes. That's kind of our idea.
Yeah, that speaks to me because as someone who has three kids and a very hectic work schedule, I really enjoy being able to actually finish games, which doesn't happen very often. So the older I get, the more that appeals to me, and I appreciate that. So on your actual Steam page, though, it says that your game, Songs of Silence, is very story-driven. Can you tell us a little bit about like the story behind this game?
Yeah, for sure. So we have a dedicated story campaign, and I just want to note that here, like I'll mention it now, that you can also play the game in on skirmish maps. Those are randomized, and you can play it single player, you can play it multiplayer with up to six players. Those game modes are also available, but we put a lot of effort into our campaign as well. So the campaign, I think, is the perfect starting point. If you're a new player, you want to understand what's going on in the world, you want to learn the ropes, how the mechanics work. So this is what you would like to do. And I don't want to go into too much detail about the story and the lore behind it. Not sure, you just have to stop me if I ramble on for too long.
No worries, yeah.
But I think the key element here is that our game is set in, maybe it's a fantasy game, first and foremost, and it's set in two different worlds at the same time, basically. They were once a single world, and they were ripped apart by cataclysmic events in the far past. And now we have two distinct worlds, and there's two human races, very different from one another, and two different cultures living in those two worlds. And they are brought back into contact because we have a phenomenon in the world called purgatories, and they are like black holes. They waltz through the land, and they devour what we call the divine hymn. That's the divine essence of the world, basically. And when they devour this hymn, they leave behind the absence of this hymn, this divine melody. So this is called the silence. So this is spreading throughout the land, and nothing can live within the silence. This is basically like a wasteland, a radioactive wasteland, really, really terrifying. And so this world is like in a state of warfare. A lot of refugees and people are uprooted, and they have to try to find new places to live in. So there's constant warfare and anarchy everywhere, and this is where the game's story is set in. And the main story follows our main protagonist called Lorelei. That's a young queen, and she has to flee from her homeland after an invasion, and basically tries to get her people into safety and find a new home to settle in. That's the starter for the events in the story. I don't want to tell you too much to avoid spoilers, but just so much so the campaign will play in both of those worlds, and you will meet other main heroes, and we will switch perspectives a couple of times throughout the campaign, and yeah, so you can understand this conflict from multiple sides.
Well, with that said, you're speaking of two different, almost like split human factions, but how many playable factions will be in the game?
So we will have three playable factions in the game. The Thousand Kingdoms is like a more down-to-earth medieval fantasy society. You would know and laugh if you like different types of games in this direction. And then we have the Old Race. That's a very old, ancient culture of the humans on the dark, like on the other world, basically on the dark side. And then we have an aggressive new religion, which is destroying those worlds, and they are using purgatories to their advantage to devour the hymn even faster and spread the silence. And all of those three have very, very distinct playstyles from one another. And they have access to a different pool of heroes, which again have access to their own cards. We use cards in the game to represent their special abilities and their strategic options and so on. And they have their own roster of units and all of this stuff. In addition, there's a big pool of neutral heroes. They come from different sub-races or subcultures within the world, and they can join any of the factions. So you have access to a lot of different heroes and playstyles when you play any single faction.
The card stuff that you're talking about, let's talk more about that for a second, because that seems to be like a central element of the game, right? So instead of like maybe using abilities, you're pulling cards from your active stack, and you're using them on both the strategic map and the tactical battles map. Can you tell us more about that and what the decision was behind that?
Exactly. Whenever you interact with the game, besides selecting an army and basic movement shenanigans, you will have to play a card. And cards, like you said, can be played in different areas of the game. On the strategic map, they are blue. We call them strategy cards. And you can, for example, found a new settlement, burn one down, spawn a new forest, summon creatures, do stuff like this. And then we have gray cards. They represent recruitment options. You mostly get those from locations while you're inside. For example, a city would offer the recruitment of spearmen, we call those hearthsworn, or different types of cavalry units, catapults, stuff like this. They could also come from your heroes to summon units, for example, or upgrade units to different ones. So those are the gray cards. And then we have red cards. Those are battle cards. You use them on the battlefield. In essence, those cards represent those special abilities. You could, in an RPG, for example, you would get little skill icons on a hotkey bar, for example. We chose cards because it fits our aesthetics very well. And we also really like this haptic feeling of dragging a card onto a target, releasing it, and it slaps down on the battlefield or on the strategic map and does something interesting. So, but basically, it's just a fancy way of displaying special skills of characters. This is not a deck-building game. That's super important to stress. So your hero will have certain abilities, representative cards. Wherever they go, they will have those cards, and you always have all of your cards available. And you can pick up new cards by leveling up your hero and so on. But this is not you have a pool of 50, 100 cards, and then you build a deck around it and attach it to different things. That's not our idea.
I actually really like the system. And also, for people who have not tried the demo, it's actually like a mix of an auto battler with cards. That's the way you sort of interact with your units rather than commanding them manually like an RTS. And for someone who doesn't really like RTS games anymore, I found that it was really enjoyable system. Can you just go into why you sort of picked the sort of auto battler rather than like a turn-based or RTS style combat? Does it just suit the cards better? Or
yeah, that's a great question. So actually, this had nothing to do with the cards. We had two goals with our game when we set out to create it. We wanted to have a fast-flowing turn-based game, and we wanted to have cinematic battles, which are genuinely enjoyable. So, and then we, you know, looked around for alternatives to, let's say, hex-based, turn-based combat affairs and stuff like this. And then we settled on this type of game. You know, you see this a lot in Totally Accurate Battle Simulator and similar games like this. So we really enjoyed the, you know, the level of chaos on the battlefield and how great this can look. We didn't want to make it completely passive. So this is why we introduced the card system, to give you some way of manipulating the positioning of your units, to call in reinforcements, to paralyze enemies just in time, to break off their charge and do all of those things. But yeah, this is why we settled on the system. It looks great. You can, just by looking at it and zooming in and looking at the different units behaving, you can learn a lot about the unit interactions. You can understand what you can do better. And it's generally fun to watch. But in the end, a battle played out in real time between, I don't know, several hundred combatants on each side only takes up to a minute. And this is a great benefit if you compare it to Total War, is obviously about massive battles which drag on forever. But if you even pick like smaller scale battles like Heroes of Might and Magic, you will spend easily 10 plus minutes in a single battle. And I think this is just not very feasible if you need to play a game where you have to fight 50 times. So this is why we tried to go for a system which, you know, is just a little bit faster, but still gives you meaningful interaction options.
I think you've done an absolutely great job on it because, yeah, like you said, passive battles are kind of boring, and then you get to like the Total War style, and it's like, it's just quite stressful. But I just really like the way you fit the auto battler into the cards and having the cooldowns on the cards, because you're like in an intense battle and you're like, oh, come on, cooldown. And then it comes off cooldown and you throw that card down, and then, yeah, your abilities or your troops do something. And yeah, I think it's like a very innovative system. I wish more games did it. And like you said, like, for example, I was a big fan of the Age of Wonders games for a long time, but like Rob said, now I've got older, I've got less time, those battles can take so long. And yeah, I just found the flow of your combat really good. It's high paced without having to put in loads of inputs per minute. Yeah, I think you've struck a really good balance with the combat system.
That's great to hear. Yeah, this is exactly what we were going for. So yeah, it's a good example, Age of Wonders. I just recently played the new installment. I really enjoy it. But after, I think, 9 hours of gameplay, I'm still in the tutorial map. And I have only played a single battle. Because, you know, the first one you have to play. But everything afterwards, like killing a couple of like kobolds on this node and killing a couple of like smaller units on this one, it takes so long. It gives you the option to skip it. So I skip it. And it's just so, it's a little bit, you know, it makes me sad. I know what kind of effort they put into this beautiful battle and all of those great 3D units. And this is the thing we want to avoid. People should be excited to play the battles, but they should not distract from the main meat of the game, which is the strategic part.
Yeah, I have to echo Juxy's sentiments, because I think that you have struck a really great balance of making it, you know, like flashy and movie-like almost, because it's, or, you know, almost like a cartoon. But you're getting this like great combat that just feels, you know, it it's just fun to watch. I mean, there's spells going off and there's, you know, units clashing. And then, of course, like you said, you know, you're like begging that timer to drop so that you can finally drop that, you know, lightning spell or something so that you can affect the combat in the way that's it's positive and works for you. So, yeah, again, I'll echo what Drexy's saying here. I think it's a really great balance and I'd really like to see more games play with that auto battler and active abilities combination there. So yeah, I as he was asking that question, I kind of was starting to think too, like what made you guys decide on the turn-based strategy game, 4X game like that? Like so few people, I'll preface this all by saying that we're clearly a 4X focused site and podcast, but you know, so few developers really tackle 4X games. So what made you guys decide that was how you're going to re-enter the strategy market?
To be completely honest, this is exactly the type of game we want to play. This was our starting point. So we invested a lot of time initially, like just to come up with this concept, drew a lot of like mockups and stuff like this, sold it internally. And this is the game of our dreams, so to speak. Like this is what we want to play, but nobody else is offering. And there were a lot of inspirations for it. Most of our inspirations are way too old, so most people will not even know them nowadays. So yeah, I'm a little bit older already. So yeah, this is how we got started. But then as a second step, we also, I think, did our homework. So we checked out the market, the competition, and kind of understood for us that this is a niche which we could serve. And we think it's kind of underserved. We also want to bring this game, for example, with full controller support on the consoles. And there are very few good strategy offerings on the consoles, but most of the time, exactly because those games are not well suited to the console's style of play. But since we have a game which flows much more nicely and you can just jump in and play 1.5 hours, 2 hours, and then you have completed an entire map, I think this is much better suited to this console type of gameplay experience as well. So yeah, this is where we initially came from. Then we thought there's actually some, you know, market here which we could serve, and this is how we ended up here. We are big fans of strategy. We always have been. So, like I said, in our company, we have built several strategy games already. Not all of them, or most of them, are actually real-time, so not turn-based. But we fondly remember our experiences with turn-based games from back in the day. So this is what we really want to bring back.
Yeah, as you were saying, I was thinking, I've been thinking, oh, I want to try this on the Steam Deck. You did mention in our preamble, it's not quite there yet, but I think it would actually be quite fun on that system as well. One thing I did want to get into is the art style, which is absolutely beautiful. Can you tell us what was the influence for that? It kind of, what it reminded me of is, I'd say anime, but anime that's sort of influenced by European style history.
Yeah, it's like a French impressionism. I mean, that's what stuck out to me, right? It kind of seems like that, but maybe I'm completely wrong. So I'm very eager to hear about that, actually.
I think both of you are exactly on the right track. So this is called Art Nouveau, and we have been particularly influenced by an artist called Alphonse Mucha. So he was active around the 1920s. And he came up with this beautiful poster style. He did very stylized portraits of legendary women like the stars and so on, like goddesses. And this guy became very popular. And this later became very, very popular in Asia and started influencing the development of early manga art. So because you just said anime, yes, I think this was a strong influence on the development of manga and then anime later. And I think Alphonse Mucha also is still popular and well-known in Japan, for example. So this specific artist we always really liked, and we wanted to make a game in this, roughly in this style. And then we started, you know, exploring this and created our own spin on it. But this is how it started, and this is what we wanted to do. So yeah, you could call it a comic style. You alluded to anime, but this is basically the grandfather of those styles. So I think a lot of people can recognize it. Like, this is not something super artsy and crazy. Like, it looks attractive. But you can also see that this is made with a high degree of skill and love. And so it still sticks out from, let's say, more common comic styles. So this was exactly our idea. We want to build this game into a recognizable game, which we can maybe make into an IP, maybe do a spin-off for this game, set in the same world, universe, with the same style. So yeah, it was very important to us to make this game memorable in all ways, any way we can.
It certainly does that. I think that it clearly stands out. I mean, I know a screenshot from Songs of Silence the second I see it because of just the unique art style you guys have, you know, used here. And I like it so much more too for the fact that it's colorful, right? Like so many games nowadays just feel like this dark, dreary, and that works for certain scenarios and universes, but the color that pops out, it does a really good job of contrasting the light and, you know, the songs or goodness of the world here you've created with this, like, you know, as you were mentioning, this like kind of slow cancer that's coming through, right? And it's really cool to see. I just love this art style. It's super great. And I'd love to see more games made like that. So the fact that you're talking about making this into like a franchise would be great. But with that, you also mentioned, you know, manga and Japanese animation and stuff like that. And I also noticed too, which this is something that I don't normally care too much about, but it does stand out that the music soundtrack is fantastic. It's really engaging and it just feels very, you know, I don't know, just epic, really. That's probably the best word I could say. And I understand you brought on like a really popular composer for this one. Could you tell us more about that too?
Yeah, for sure. I'm super happy that you noticed that. It really makes me happy because, I always wanted to work with Hitoshi Sakimoto as the guy. And he is, responsible for a lot of awesome soundtracks, for example, for Final Fantasy Tactics and similar games. So, yeah, I always had a fond memory of the soundtracks. And I still, to this day, sometimes it pops into my mind and I just start humming this kind of sound. So, yeah, for this project, we contacted him and, you know, piqued his interest enough. So he actually wanted to support the game and he did the full original soundtrack for the game, which we also want to release, I think, kind of soonish, separately. So yeah, and he really captures this militaristic fantasy, sometimes a little bit upbeat vibe. It's very different to, let's say, a Western style, which is more dreary and grim dark often, and which is more like on the, it's less melody driven, the Western style, and this one is very melody driven. So yeah, this is exactly why we wanted to pick him. And I think he really captured the atmosphere of our world very well. And again, yeah, like you mentioned as well, like it's also a little bit of a hope that it might pique some interest also in the Japanese audience with this composer, maybe the style, yeah, maybe make the game a bit more popular over there than what would normally be possible.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that he's nailed it. I mean, it just feels, like you said, it's upbeat. It has this very grand feel to it. And it just makes me like want to charge, you know, head on. And it feels like the kind of music that I'd want to hear as a fantasy combatant. So great stuff. I really like it. And it did stand out. I didn't even know that you'd brought on somebody as you know, as well known as Toshi Sakimoto. That's how you pronounce it, I think.
Exactly.
Okay, great. I think bringing on him, I didn't even realize you'd brought him on, but when I was hearing the soundtrack and I was just like, man, like this music is great. And then when I saw that little blurb at the end of your Steam page, I was like, oh, that must be why. It was really just, it hit me. It was really great. So, and again, music isn't really something that I normally I pay attention to unless it's exceptionally good or exceptionally bad. And it certainly stood out to me. So for the exceptionally good reason. So
that's great to hear.
Well, so you guys are moving into a Kickstarter now, right? So from my understanding, you're going to be better off at explaining this. It says on the Steam page that you're close to release, like a quarter to release, but what's the Kickstarter about? And like, where are you headed with that? What is your goal with it?
So yeah, that's actually a difficult topic. So I'm not sure how well you're aware, but the state of the industry is quite difficult right now. And you really want to make this game as good as it can be. Like this is really our baby. We invested our, you know, own resources in this and want to make an exceptional game here. And the simple matter is like that we are running low on resources. It's not it's not critical. We will release the game. This is fine. But we want to really achieve the high standards we set ourselves. And the Kickstarter is going to help us in this regard, just to acquire a couple more, like a little bit more funds. And also, and that's the second reason, which is also quite important, we want to draw more attention to our game before we go into an early access and later in the year then a full release. So yeah, those two reasons. Those are the main reasons why we want to do this. We have never done a Kickstarter before, so it's very exciting for us as well. So I hope everything turns out well, but I think this game at least has a good chance here.
Yeah, I think it will actually do pretty well, especially because how good your game looks. I think those tend to do well on Kickstarter. And plus, hopefully with stuff like this podcast, people will pique their interest, because I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I think the demo too. I think having that demo up there, of course, you know, there's a lot of people that are wary of Kickstarters just because there's nothing to show for it yet. Just a bunch of pretty videos or screenshots, but you guys have clearly have a game here, right? So I think that when you have something that's close to the finish line like this and that you can actually play, I think that'll do really well. I'm really excited to see how well it does.
Yeah, speaking about the demo, I think that's a really good point to mention it. Like, we want to release a new, like, updated version of the demo by the time the Kickstarter campaign comes live. And we also have a closed beta running for anybody interested, so you can apply, where you can play way more of the game already. And yeah, so look forward to the updated demo. I think this made a big jump forward on all levels, really.
Yeah, I know that I won't say too much because I am NDA'd, but I am in that beta and it is exciting. We'll say that. It is very exciting. So I would certainly agree that if you're interested in what you've seen, that you should apply, because I think there's a lot more to this game than just what the demo has shown. In fact, a lot more. And what's there is really exciting.
Outside of the main campaign, can you sort of go into details about the skirmish mode and then probably the multiplayer as well, which I think quite a few people will be interested, considering the speed of the game is a lot higher than normal 4X games?
Our skirmish maps are available for single player or multiplayer. You're up to six players, and you can play versus one another. You can also team up against AI or in groups, however you want. And skirmish maps are available in three sizes. What you have experienced in the demo or early in the closed beta are small maps. So just to give you like a rough understanding how big this is, and a large map is about twice the size of this the map in map one, for example, in the campaign. And then also remember that, especially in the skirmish, you can choose to play the game on both worlds at the same time. So we get actually double the landmass. One map is on the light side, on the world of Sonan, and the other world is the dark side, which is called Irtime. So if you play a large map on both sides, it's about four times the size of the skirmish map one, just to give you a rough understanding here. Those skirmish maps are randomized, so you can play them over and over and over again. You get different terrain layouts, you get different, you know, locations, unit placements, artifacts, all those things. And obviously you can pick any of the playable factions. You can choose a starting hero, and the starting hero can have a legendary, can be a legendary hero. So you can, it's basically like a subclass. You can change the layout, the starting layout of your hero, what kind of cards you have access to, how your capital city starts, what kind of starting units you have, stuff like this. And then you jump into the game, and it's the same turn-based affair up to five opposing factions, AI played or player-based, and you can recruit additional heroes up to four standard. You can also increase this limit, and yeah, then you try to dominate the map.
I may have missed it, but you said that the maps are procedural, right?
Partially. So we do partially generation of the terrain, and then everything which is on the map is randomized. Yeah, that's the thing. It should have indefinitely playable, replayable maps here.
Excellent. Yeah. So, and then when you're playing these skirmishes and stuff, you're able to choose from any of the three as a playable faction, right?
Exactly. Okay. Not all of them are available at the start of the game. We have a system we call the Lexicon, like a big book of knowledge in the game, in the metagame. You have not been able to experience it yet in the demo. And you can complete quests, so we call them quests. They are basically different tasks, you know, for example, do something in the campaign, save all the refugees you brought with you and settle in peace somewhere, like a lot of secret missions as well. And if you complete those, you can unlock new content, for example, playable factions, new heroes, new legendary heroes, all those things. So initially you only have access to one faction, a couple of starting heroes, and then you unlock more and more as you go.
Alex, a question from our community is whether or not you could discuss a little bit more or tell us a little bit more about the kingdom management portion of the game. They're concerned because of the speed of the game that the empire management might not be as deep. And would you be able to expand on what you'll be able to do in your cities?
Yeah, for sure. So kingdom management is still an important part of our game. But let's say compared to an Age of Wonders, for example, you spend way less time doing it. It's in our game, it's all about making a couple but very impactful decisions and not a ton of minor decisions like building a granary now and then the barracks next time and then 100 more buildings, which give you a little bit of income. In our game, you have access to strategy cards, the blue ones, and you play them on the strategy map. So if a hero, for example, a Hierophant, that's a priest-type character, they have access to the Golden Temple. And if you place such a building on an existing location, you add a location enhancement to it. This is visually represented on the map, so you see like a big temple complex growing up there from a building site. And this can alter how your location works. It will change the income of the location. It may grant what we call perks, those special rules for the location. For example, you can fortify locations or you give them supply. This will heal units, or lookout. This will discover hidden enemies, because we have a very interesting system of hiding armies and forests. But you can add all those things. But on the other hand, the super important aspect is that it unlocks new recruitment options to the location. In the case of the Golden Temple, this is a very specialized type of summoning priest unit, and you can add them to your armies to summon more angelic units and so on to create this perpetual mobile type of army. And each location can only have a single building or location upgrade. So there's a dedicated slot for it, and you have to, if you play a second building on it, the old one is overwritten. So it's really about what kind of buildings do I need and which quantity, and how do I change my locations? The ones on the front lines, they need fortifications, they need heavy units and a lot of supply for my armies. The ones on the backside, I can focus on economy growth, and that's the decision you are making. You're not individually upgrading every location with multiple upgrade things like this. So this is how this works. It's a bit difficult if you don't know our inspirations, but we are very much inspired by a little bit older games. Warlords, the old Warlord series is a big favorite of ours. Kohan is a good example. And those games, Conquest of Elysium is a really good one. Again, those games, you either don't spend time upgrading your locations. It's more about, expanding your kingdom and trying to keep it. Sometimes they have a little bit of expansion. We have a little bit of an interesting mix of those elements, but it's more about keeping up the expansion, keeping up the aggression flowing across the map, being beaten back, then restore your armies, go back to the front lines. It's not sit tight and build up your cities for the next 50 turns and then move up slowly. That's not the type of game we wanted to build.
Yeah, which I love to hear, because I hate that's probably the downside of a lot of Forex games, is that you get sort of bogged down in micromanagement of all your cities and stuff like that. I've only played the demo, so I only really got that sort of first chapter. But how does the game play out later on in the game? I think I had will you end up with like multiple heroes with armies that you sort of control?
Yes, for sure.
At once, and how does that work? Would you end up with like 20 heroes, or is it a limited amount? Can you go into the scope of that as it goes through the game, the campaign?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously we'll start the map with at least one hero. And then you, in the story, like you played the very first map, I think you will have gained access to a second hero very quickly. New heroes join or leave your side as the story demands. You will at the maximum control about 5 heroes at the same time, with one exception, which is a really big epic battle where there are a couple more heroes involved. But it's up to 5 heroes at the same time. And the same goes for the non-campaign, for the skirmish maps as well. You start with a single hero. New heroes offer their services every couple of turns. It's a little bit randomized. So you have to keep some money in the bank and jump on an opportunity if it presents itself, if you like the hero being offered. And you can recruit up to 5 heroes in parallel. So each of those heroes have their own movement points, their own army to lead. And this is, again, a very important decision we made very early on to keep the game flowing. We early decided against moving individual units without their heroes. So you always have to have a hero present to, put units in his or her army, and then you can move them around and explore and fight and all those things. This means even in the mid to late game, where people have 3, 4, even 5 heroes in extreme cases, turns can flow relatively quickly. Instead of just moving every new unit you produce from some random city to the front lines all individually, this just takes too much time and it's very tedious. So you really focus on a couple of, again, decisions per turn, which are very impactful, and you need to kind of optimize your logistics as well. Somebody needs to pick up new units, bring them to the front lines, take damaged units, all the loot you gained in battle, bring it back to your safe backfield. to cash in the loot, but if they're intercepted on the way back in an ambush, for example, then you lose all of this stuff. Like, there's a lot of interesting interplay here, but you will always focus on a couple of heroes and a couple of big decisions you can make per turn.
You're speaking my language. This is great, because again, it's another thing with me with micromanagement, right? And again, and I hate to keep pointing to Age of Wonders 4, you know, like, I don't want to make Age of Wonders 4 out to be the pariah here, but like, that's my concern with games like that, where you can have almost as many heroes as you want. You can, you know, buy into expanding your hero roster and add to them. And it just becomes a little overwhelming, right? And especially when you have customization through your heroes. And tell me a little bit more about how Songs of Silence does their hero customization, because I know you level up and stuff like that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think this is actually quite interesting how our game handles hero customization in total. It's a little bit different. So on the one hand, we have just very normal experience points. You gain them mostly by fighting a battle and sometimes completing adventures. That's a specific type of location you can explore. And then you gain level ups. You initiate the level up also by playing a level up card you gain in your hand when you have achieved enough experience points. And then you grow some stats of the hero, and you always have to make a choice between three different card offerings. You can either unlock completely new cards. Those can be gray, blue, or red cards, you know, the recruitment options, strategic cards, or battle cards. Or you can upgrade already existing cards in your hand. So all cards can go from bronze rank to silver to gold rank and become stronger in the process. So three options, you have to pick one. All those options are randomly selected from the pool of this hero's class. Each hero class in the game, 15 classes in total on release, will have their own unique pool of cards. And this really allows them to unlock distinct and different playstyles, synergies with different units, access different pools of units, having very different combat functionality, strategic options, all those things. So you really have to figure out, you know, which heroes do I need to level up to kind of improve my overall strategy here? How can I make use of the different units available on the map? Because those are mostly randomized. Maybe I get some heavy beast type units from nearby forests. So I might want to pick up or level up a hero who is very good with beast type units. So that's the one angle. And then the other angle, because we have not talked about it, is artifacts. And normally in games like this, you can equip heroes. For example, you can give them a sword and boots and all those things. We handle this a little bit different. Artifacts in our game are per army. So your hero can carry artifacts with them because the hero represents the slot for the army. But artifacts travel with the army. They are in the what we call reserves. And they boost the entire army they are traveling with. Some artifacts also boost locations. But this is really interesting when you get ambushed, especially, but also when you lose your army, like you lose a fight, then the enemy gets to steal all your artifacts and all your loot wagons, like all the gold you're currently carrying. And this leads to a really interesting tug of war situation where you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. Like, you're the most powerful army, you put all your artifacts there, but just lose it, like just lose a battle once, or move into an ambush. You don't pay attention once, and then all of the stuff is gone. So it's always a really interesting risk versus reward mechanic here.
I'm not sure if you are ready to answer this, but looking into the future, I think this game, whilst I'm not a biggest fan of DLC, I think DLC would work really well with this, like a different story from a different perspective. Are you able to speak about it, or is it too early? Because the game's not released, I know that. But what are your plans for after 1.0?
We definitely already have plans, and I can talk a little bit about it. So if the game is reasonably successful, which we hope for, obviously, we really want to support it for the long run, and offering some updates free of cost is something we are definitely considering, but also offering some smaller or larger DLCs. So what we definitely would like to continue is, you know, expand on our beautiful lore and game world by bringing in new stories like campaigns. And we would accompany this with additional playable factions with their own set of heroes, cards, units, locations, and all those things. In the current story, there are already a couple of sub-factions which play minor or even major roles throughout the campaign, which are not fully fleshed out as playable factions, but you can already recruit some of the heroes as neutral heroes, and they have a set of cards and some units attached and so on. So obviously expanding in those directions would be a great possible way for the future. But we also have some some factions and content we are already working on, which is not announced at all, and we would love to bring in post-release. So yeah, this is definitely one thing. The other thing we are considering is just bringing out just more exciting content, like map packs, you know, more biomes for the world map, like a desert biome, a frost biome, creatures which live in it, battlefields, effects, a couple of heroes and units to go along with it. Stuff like this could also be possible.
With the Kickstarter, do you have any sort of like goals, content?
Yeah, like stretch goals?
Oh yeah, for sure. They are currently being finalized, and I don't want to, you know, tell you something and somebody is going to rip my head off afterwards. But like, there is, there will be some features we would love to bring to the game. This is exactly what I said. We want to get the game to this high standard we set ourselves. So there are some really cool features, like, for example, challenge maps. That imagine those being like campaign maps light. We pre-built them, and you get into a very, very challenging situation. For example, the fall of Old Arengard. And you have a situation which you can barely survive, but your task is to actually prosper and defeat the three strong nations in the north within 20 turns, stuff like this. Or there's an outbreak of a terrible plague, and all the cities get affected, and you have to survive this somehow. Like, maps like this is something you would really like to bring into the game, and they can then in turn can have quests in the game, and if you complete them, you unlock new content like the Plague Bearer, like type of hero class and stuff like this. So yeah, this is stuff we definitely would like to do. We also have a couple of features, for example, for multiplayer, like to make this a richer experience, we would like to add to the game. And those type of stretch goals is what we are currently thinking about. Obviously, also additional content and so on. But yeah, we are still working on this package and will be announced soon.
Great. Well, Alex, we have two questions from the community, and I want to ask those real quick. And then, of course, we'll try to wrap things up here a little bit. My first question from our community is a question about diplomacy, and they were just curious to know like how deep diplomacy is, or if there isn't any diplomacy with, you know, among factions.
It's a great follow-up question to the Kickstarter stuff. This is exactly one of those features we would like to bring into the game in a little bit of a greater extent. Our key goal for this is that players can play as teams, because I really enjoy playing multiplayer together with my wife, my friends, not against them. So this is a feature we really love to support. And and this is where we would bring in like a simple diplomacy system just to set up like alliance status and so on. It is not our goal to have very deep diplomacy similar to some other 4X games where you can really spend 10 minutes just figuring out different options and sending a tribute to those guys and trading a technology with them and doing this and that. Like, it's not our goal. Our game remains focused. Normally, you're on a map, you are at war with the other factions, and this is a battle to the death. That's the main setup, and this is the setup we would like to keep. So yeah, building a super deep diplomacy system is not something we would like to do, even if we had the resources, but allowing people to team up, that's the goal we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I think a lot of people actually appreciate having some sort of a co-op aspect to the game versus maybe, two of you versus the AI and stuff like that. I think that would be really interesting. I know a lot of my friends really like to play co-op games and stuff like that. So yeah, sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I fully agree.
And the last question we have from our community is, because everything else you've answered, which is awesome, I really appreciate it, Alex. But the last question that you haven't answered was a question about random events and whether or not those are in the game.
Random events is also like an enhanced content package we would like to have maybe as part of a stretch goal. There are a lot of really interesting events, but to be completely frank, most of them are scripted right now and they revolve around the campaign. So you can discover a lot of things, and things can happen if you do things in the right order or talk to the person with the correct hero, all those interesting events. But specifically for the skirmish map, we do not use those currently. It has been planned, we just had to cut it. So this would be a great addition to the game. We have a lot of plans, a lot of designs for this specific type of feature and the content. It's not currently part of the game, but hopefully it will make it into the game some point in the future.
I just really love the whole lore and art style and everything about what you've done. It's really good, and I'm kind of hoping it does well so we get maybe other games based in the same universe, maybe like a prequel or maybe a game that's sort of not a strategy game but based in this universe. I just really love the way everything looks, the lore of it. And I'm just fingers crossed for this game to do well, and hopefully we see more from this universe.
Thank you so much. This really warms my heart. We put a lot of effort into creating this rich and genuinely interesting world. We think this is it deserves to be followed up on, I think, as well. And yeah, for sure, it doesn't have to be a strategy game. It could be like a top-down or third-person RPG type of game, because we are quite experienced in those type of games as well and super big fans. Like, I think it lends itself very well to all this type of games. But yeah, for now, our focus is to make this the best it can be, and then let's just hope that people actually enjoy the game.
Yeah, I would love to see actually a prequel to this.
That's funny. We had the origin story, the emergence of the Purgatories as part of the game. We cut it out for budget reasons. But so there's a lot of interesting story already written here and some interesting characters, which still features somewhat in the game. But yeah, so there's a lot of stuff to explore for sure.
Yeah. In addition to what Drexy said, I'm very excited about what you guys have done here. I think that not only is the art style very unique and just lovely to look at, but the gameplay feels unique enough, and the combat itself, I think, is probably the real showcase for me. I think that, you know, the game, the other elements of the game feel pretty familiar to most people, but the combat, just watching the combat and engaging in the combat, is a real treasure. It's real fun. And I have no doubts that the Kickstarter will do well, and I have no doubts that you guys will do well, because I think that there's clearly a lot of passion here, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And Alex, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to us and answer our questions. And we wish you the very best with the Kickstarter, and we will certainly do our part to draw attention to it. And again, thank you very much, and best of luck.
Thank you so much. And thank you for giving me the chance to talk about this game, this very special game for us.
Yeah, we'll certainly be watching it, and we're very glad you were able to share this game with us, and we were able to hear more about your history and the people behind Chimera Entertainment. So thank you very much. And this was Rob, Drexy, and Alex for Explorminates. Until next time, keep exploring. We'll be right back.